Concussions and athletes were back in the headlines yet again last week when former UW football star Chris Borland announced his retirement from the NFL after 1 year in the pros, ultimately leaving millions of dollars on the table. He said the money wasn't worth the risks of long-term damage to his brain.
This comes in the midst of a big national discussion about head injuries, not just in pro football, but in a variety of sports, from peewee teams up through professional sports leagues.
Our next guest has been following this issue for a lot longer than most of us. Dr. Michael McCray is a professor of neurosurgery and director of brain injury research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's been researching the impact of concussions and brain trauma for over 20 years. He wrote the book Mild Traumatic Brain Injury and Post-Concussion Syndrome, released back in 2007. Dr. McCray, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me.
So Chris Borland, high-profile athlete, in working with athletes and coaches and parents yourself, do you encounter a lot of people asking similar questions about the risks of head injuries?
Well, certainly this topic is on the radar of more athletes, parents, coaches, sport governing bodies than it was 20 years ago. I would not say that the tide has changed dramatically, but certainly we have more parents, for instance, contacting our clinic, asking about the safety of their son or daughter continuing to participate in contact or collision sports. It's quite a difference from years ago or a couple decades ago when we were trying to convince parents and athletes to perhaps take their foot off the pedal just for a few more days before they return to competition. And now we oftentimes have to counsel athletes and parents that it's indeed safe for them to return.
And as I mentioned, you've been at this issue longer than a lot of people. What first got your attention about sports-related brain injuries?
Well, in many ways, I was just lucky to be in the right place at the right time. I was a postgraduate fellow at the medical school at Northwestern in Chicago back in the mid-90s, and a couple of my mentors at that time, a neurologist and a neuropsychologist there, were both brain injury research experts. I was lucky enough to be involved in their clinical and laboratory work, and at that time, the interest and study of sport-related concussion was very new to the horizon, a shift from studying civilians and emergency department patients, for instance, in car accidents and assaults and so forth. And for me, it was sort of the perfect combination of my long-term interest in sports, being a former athlete and enthusiast myself, and my interest in the neurosciences. And it was sort of just it took on a life of its own then, and here we are more than 20 years later.
And what have we learned? What's a key thing we know now about these brain injuries that we didn't know two decades ago?
Well, 20 years ago, the fruit was hanging very low in that it was mostly a guessing game in terms of our scientific understanding of the injury and having very little evidence on which to base our clinical management decisions, whether it be in terms of diagnosis, treatment, or ultimately return to play decisions in the management of athletes affected by concussion. Fast forward 20 years, and we have made enormous strides in our understanding of the acute clinical effects of this injury, how it presents, how long it typically takes an athlete to recover in terms of symptoms and cognitive ability, balance, and other functional capacities, and how we go about measuring recovery in order to make an evidence-based or more objective decision about an athlete's readiness to return to competition, rather than just solely relying on their self-report of their symptom recovery, which is obviously influenced by their motivations to return to play as soon as they can.
I'm talking to Dr. Michael McCray about concussions, head injuries, and sports. And Dr. McCray, let's get down to the sidelines, the decision-making. First, a question I bet you're asked a lot from parents. You know, should, given what we know now, should we let our kids play football, contact football? Should we let them do headers in soccer? What is your general advice to parents panicking over these questions right now?
Well, you've struck a chord there, I think, and used the right term. My general advice is to not panic. I, in fact, do encourage participation in all competitive sports at all levels when it's appropriate for your kid, based on their age, their ability, and their interest. I mean, the issues are perhaps more sociological than neurological when it comes to youth sports. And that's probably a discussion for a different day. But as it relates to, you know, the effects of concussion and the risks that surround it, there is no question that there is the potential for concussion in various contact and collision sports like football, soccer, lacrosse, ice hockey, wrestling, and so forth, or in basketball, as we witnessed in the NCAA tournament last night. But the fact of the matter is a single uncomplicated sport-related concussion is followed by an uncomplicated course of recovery in a matter of days in the overwhelming majority of athletes. And when recovery extends much longer, there are usually other comorbidities or other factors that are contributing to that lengthier recovery. By no means am I suggesting that we go back to the old days where athletes commonly return to competition within the same game after a concussion. But I think an important message here for parents is that as long as your son or daughter is properly treated and managed after a concussion, their risk of any lingering long-term problems is nil, and they would be able to return to competition without problem.
But that seems to be the key that people in the medical community are talking about, the awareness of the signs of that first concussion and the willingness and maybe the rule setting to make sure that the player at whatever age doesn't get back into play until they've recovered sufficiently.
That's correct. So believe it or not, Rob, I think as recently as 2012, I was a participant on the Zurich panel in Switzerland, where we meet every 4 years to disseminate an international guideline for the assessment and management of sport-related concussion. And it wasn't until 2012 that our statement came out and definitively recommended that at all competitive levels, athletes should not return to competition on the same day as injury. Now, that might seem like a very intuitive recommendation to all your listeners and to most of us, frankly, but it took a long time to build consensus on even something as intuitive as that recommendation. If you look at some of the published data and other epidemiologic studies out there, we have literally in a matter of 5 to 10 years, we've taken the average time that athletes are withheld from competition after a concussion from 10 minutes to 2 weeks. And most of us would argue that as long as an athlete is given adequate time for recovery and not shuffled back onto the field of play too soon, that their risks really have been eliminated. And they're given adequate time for recovery, and they're able to return to their normal activities without risk.
Dr. Michael McCray from the Medical College of Wisconsin is with us. He's been studying the impact of concussions and brain injuries among athletes and others.
And we want to hear from you. You can call in with your questions and your experiences at 800-642-1234. If you're an athlete or the parent of a kid in sports, do you worry about the risk of concussion? Have you quit or avoided a sport because of brain worries? And if you're a coach, how does your league handle these concussion issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation about head trauma, concussions, and athletes with Dr. Michael McCray from the Medical College of Wisconsin.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. As an athlete or the parent of kids in sports, how have you dealt with worries, concerns about head injuries, about concussions? Do you think we have enough precautions in place? And if you're a coach at any level, what's in place in your sport to protect against repeated head injury, and do you think it's enough? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Paul starting us off now in Oregon. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me. Good topic, I appreciate it. It's timely for me as an assistant rugby coach here for high school athletes. I not only have to speak with them to this topic, but their parents. You may know or may not know that rugby-style tackling is different than football in that your head is supposed to be outside any outside the body, so you're not risking any impact with a knee or striking the runner, and wrapping your arms around the runner as well. And I'm just curious if the doctor thinks that's enough. What's a good thing? What's a good way to go about educating our parents about this?
Well, Paul, I can't speak specifically to rugby, but I can tell you there are commonalities between rugby and efforts being made at all competitive levels in football in an effort to revise and reform tackling technique and ultimately remove the head from the equation. One of the sayings is not first and not top, meaning don't lead with the head and certainly don't have your head down when making a tackle in football. And you and other listeners may be aware that there are very broad-based efforts nationally right now in Pop Warner football, in USA football, with very elaborate tackling teaching methods and tutorials for coaches that are required, with the understanding that if we're going to make a change in the game to make it safer from the standpoint of tackling technique, this will likely be generational, that we can't start solely at the professional level where we're changing policy and so forth. This will have to be disseminated at the collegiate level, the high school level, and down into youth sports so that we create a new generation of athletes, football players or rugby players, whatever it might be, who really adhere to and adopt a safer tackling technique.
Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. We're talking to Dr. Michael McCray about sports and concussions and how to reduce the risk of head injuries. Dr. McCray, before we get back to our callers, one of the concerns, and came up with this Chris Borland case, is not just the tackling, but the initial collision between linemen in football and linebackers in some cases repeated again and again throughout the game. No one of them may be enough to get a concussion, but a series of smaller head traumas. Is that something you have a concern about that you think needs to be dealt with?
Well, certainly it's the topic of further research in terms of determining whether or not there is an association between repetitive head impact exposure and either short-term or long-term risk. In this case, I think you're referring to chronic traumatic encephalopathy, mm-hmm. which really is a separate discussion all of its own, reserved for an extremely small number of cases in the literature, and papers published as recently as a month ago suggesting that the number of those cases is much smaller than originally thought. But yes, one of the arms or aims of our research is to actually measure. We use accelerometers in all of our athletes that record and measure the frequency and magnitude of all head impacts that they sustain during practices and games over the course of multiple seasons, and to correlate whether or not that head impact exposure is a determinant of injury risk and recovery.
Back to our callers now. We've got Chris on the line in Ashland. Chris, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm a U-10 soccer coach up here in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and I currently don't teach headers because of concerns of concussions and kind of following the philosophy of Brandon Chastain, who has a movement of, you know, avoiding headers or teaching headers because the possibility of collisions with head-to-head kind of contact or, you know, even head-to-ball because of early development of brains and, you know, not really teaching that until they get into high school. And I was just wondering, is there any kind of research that shows, you know, early concussions and, you know, what kind of effect that may have later on in life to support, you know, her kind of movement?
Chris, thanks for the call.
That's a great question, Coach, and a couple important points come to mind. To answer your direct question, no, the literature does not suggest that there is a link between heading exposure and short-term or long-term risk. However, you have touched on an important point that heading itself, not because of the impact of the head to the ball, heading itself is, in fact, one of the highest risk activities in competitive soccer. because of not only concussions, but the rate of all forms of injury that occur during attempted headers. But more often than not, far more often than not, the mechanism is head-to-head, head-to-elbow, head-to-ground, head-to-knee, and other things that go wrong during attempted headers. And what that really, one of the policy developments that has helped drive by the American Pediatrics Association is a recommendation that players not participate in heading until, number one, they are physically capable of doing it in terms of strength and agility, and number two, they're adequately skilled at it as an injury prevention strategy.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call and sharing your concerns there. One thing I always wonder about, and you alluded to this earlier, Dr. McCray, with wanting to keep athletes off the field after that initial concussion, athletes are there because they want to play. So is it hard to get someone to be willing to fess up that they have concussion-like symptoms, knowing that they're risking being out of the game they love for weeks?
It's fairly well known that for years, or forever perhaps, that many athletes choose not to come forward and report their injury. We have published a paper, maybe more than a decade ago, indicating that with a confidential survey of athletes, we figured that about half of the concussions that occurred were unreported. More recently, we replicated that work and wanted to know what has been the impact of educational campaigns, state legislation, and so forth. And there has been a major reduction in unreported concussions over the past decade. Athletes are better educated to recognize the signs and symptoms of injury. They're aware of the potential risks. And frankly, what we've also disseminated to athletes that is something that I refer to as the exchange rate. And that is that you are actually likely to lose less time from competition if you come forward and report your injury immediately rather than choose to press forward, practice 4 or 5 more days, complicate your recovery, and then come forward. And that's what I refer to as an exchange rate that athletes, parents, and coaches can get their arms around.
Dr. McCray, that's a great bit of advice to leave us with. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I've been talking to Dr. Michael McCray. He's a professor of neurosurgery and director of brain injury research at the Medical College of Wisconsin, talking about athletes, traumatic brain injury, and when to come out of the game.